or near enough. Sick and tired of that old man looking down on us. Come together, as we think we got a plan. Save a teeny tiny traveling folk band.
Hey there, guys. It's Sam bringing the intro to you this week. Hannah is a little under the weather, so I'm going to be taking over the intro duties. Hope you guys don't mind. This week is our interview with the J Players, and it was one of those interviews that just, there was just so much to talk about. The J Players were so friendly and welcoming and great conversationalists. Certainly a contender for a part two interview down the line, just because, as Hannah mentions in the interview, we only got through about half the questions that we even wanted to ask. Absolutely great interview, and I think you guys will notice just how friendly and welcoming they are throughout all of it. Real quick before we jump into the interview, please don't forget, go to iTunes, rate us those 5 stars. You know, you don't have to say anything special. To quote my heroes from the Crime and Sports podcast, just say you're following directions. As a matter of fact, this week, why don't you go ahead, go to iTunes, rate us 5 stars, and type "get well soon, Hannah," so she can get over her stomach bug just a little bit quicker with the motivation from the Flat Nickel family. By the way, if you listen to our episodes and you want to try and reach out to us over social media, we are always going to be checking up on the hashtag Flat Nickel Fam. So use that for sure. Last week we had our first ever Sam Interviews the World segment with Aaron Dodd, a sculptor from Indiana. Go ahead and let us know what you thought about that. We might do more in the future if you guys were pretty well receptive to it. Generally, they're going to be a little bit shorter just because we want them to be small, 10, 15 minute segments. We happen to have enough time in the interview that I made it about 18 minutes, but it'll generally be just a small little chunk out of the show so that you guys can get interviews from, you know, other people who are involved in the independent artist world. That said, let's jump into the J Players interview, and I think you guys are really going to enjoy this one.
So for our listeners at home that are not going to know this, but we know this, this is my first time meeting you guys. Yeah. I have not met you guys. I've heard of you guys before, just throughout different events that you've played and through Matt, and this is one of the interviews that Matt Wheeler sort of set us up with or was a bridge for. We talked about what did Sean call him?
The guru of anything East Coast.
The guru of East Coast
music.
That is an official
title you should have.
Yeah, on his business card.
Yeah.
That's a good idea.
We kind of owe Matt Wheeler like showrunner credit or producer
right?
credit. Because
yeah,
he took right. us up with...
I feel like a lot of us do.
Yeah. Yeah. No, he was... that was like a really awesome interview to... which I wasn't... I'd only met him a couple of times prior to that. And he was always super friendly. Like I bought a t-shirt from him and I booked him at my venue. And,
nice.
You know, he was always super friendly. But I never really spoke
sure.
to him, sat down and talked to him. And so it was really interesting to talk to him particularly about the business side
yeah.
of things, because I sort of think of him as being someone that knows what's what when
he
it comes
does.
To touring and all that stuff. Sorry. So basically the way that this podcast works is it's pretty much an open discussion. I researched you guys a little bit. I saw some of the stuff that you've been doing. I have some questions to ask you about that stuff and some upcoming things that you're going to be working on.
Yeah.
But if there's something that you guys specifically want to talk about, if there's something you want to rant about, you know, if there's any questions you have for us, if there's anything in particular that you want to talk about, we're very laid back. If there's anything that you guys want to talk about in particular, don't be afraid to sort of steer
sure.
the conversation. It is really just, this is sort of based off of the past couple years. We would have people over at my house
mm-hmm.
and we would play music and talk about the industry. And so we decided that we wanted to sort of turn that into a podcast and
That's
share,
great.
Do it with everybody.
That's great.
So one of the first things that I saw when I Googled your name was that you guys did a So Far Akron
We
performance,
did.
Which first of all, I love Akron.
Yeah.
It's a great city. Really cool, like up and coming music scene.
Yeah.
I didn't know that they were doing So Far shows in Akron. I'm
yeah.
glad that they are. But I guess the first thing is like, have you played any other So Far shows and how did you get involved with So Far? Because it's something that comes up a lot on
yeah.
the podcast.
Well, that was our very first So Far show and we were just so excited to start with So Far. They emailed us. We had a friend that actually works with, or a band friend, as we call it. He's in another band who works with So Far There and who had recommended it. And when they were like, hey, you know, we want it, we're like, absolutely, we are driving to Ohio. And it was incredible. It was like the best first show. It was in a rock climbing gym. Mm. Oh, and it was packed. And they did the video, and it was just the people there that run it were amazing. And so then we were hooked, of course. So then we've done twice, I think we're twice in New York. Mm-hmm. So far, New York, DC once. Is that it for the moment? That might be it for the moment. But we're certainly always reaching out, especially when we're going to other cities trying to coordinate, hey, the day before, the day after, like, can we do a So Far show with you guys? And sometimes it'll work out.
So that Akron show, you just did that as a one-off?
We did that as a one-off. We booked a second show that weekend because we stayed the weekend with the band up there. And it was a crazy road trip on the way back. It was, what, February? We decided to drive to Ohio, which, of course, it's snowing. So, like, this is... And then the way back, we're taking my Jeep, which we usually do, and the wheel almost falls off.
Yeah, the lug nuts were gone.
Yeah, the lug nuts. We didn't realize what the noise was this whole, like, six-hour drive up. We were just like, ignore it. That was mostly me. Like, ignore it. And then we're on the turnpike and pull over, and five of the six lug nuts have sheared off the back wheel. Of course, it's like a Sunday evening. Yeah, never were shut. And we're towed off the turf. It was a whole... But despite that, we would have done the whole thing again. Yeah. Wheel falling off and everything.
I'm actually planning on moving to Cleveland within the next year or so. Yeah. And so one of our first experiences out in Cleveland was going and seeing the band Ottawa play in sort of their... That's where they're from.
Yeah.
And it was in January, and it's what we did for my mom's birthday. And she's like, yeah, because everybody wants to go to Cleveland in January.
Exactly.
That's super smart. And we immediately went from Cleveland and booked it straight down to Kingsport. We drove from Ohio to Kingsport because it was so cold.
Yeah.
And it was snowy and cold in Kingsport, too. I don't know why we thought it would be any better. But yeah, no, Cleveland or Ohio in the winter in general is... It's quite the decision to make as far as touring. I think we talked about when we interviewed Roebuck. Didn't they say that they were going to be in like Canada over the winter, or they were touring in Canada over the winter? Right. And I'm like, that just
it shows your commitment and love of music.
Yeah, it's maybe not a choice that I would make, but I support you making it.
Yeah. Exactly.
As far as like, so you had a band friend that introduced you to So Far Akron.
Yeah.
As far as the other bands or artists that you've performed with at the other So Far shows, have you sort of stayed in touch with them, any of them?
Yeah, and they're all such phenomenal artists. I mean, the level of musicianship that is there is bar none. So you're always meeting these people that are just like your jaws on the floor, and you're like, we have to perform after them. But the cool thing that happened at the New York So Far, I think that was our second one, is it was right after Tom Petty had passed, and the organizer was like, oh, maybe you guys do a Tom Petty song to us. And we were like, yeah, we know Free Fallin'. So we coordinated. It was a 5 or 6-piece brass band.
Yep.
And then another solo acoustic guy, and we were like, hey, let's just do this all together. And without practicing, it was the greatest thing. You know, 100 people like screaming Free Fallin' back at you, and you're doing this like impromptu performance with those artists, and that's the kind of community that So Far has.
Yeah.
And so you keep in touch with those artists because they're just amazing, and you're all doing similar thing but in different ways.
Yeah. I've always been fascinated by talking about So Far because I've never been to a So Far show.
Oh yeah.
I was invited to one because of a band that I worked for years ago, played one in Pittsburgh. That was my first ever experience. It was an indie rock band that had to do an acoustic set with a mandolin.
Right.
Don't know where the mandolin came from, but they threw it in there just for fun. It was like the lead singer and the guitarist great grandfather's mandolin that they had restored, and they're like, I guess we're gonna play mandolin because we'll never use it otherwise. And then I didn't really hear about it after that until I started really like talking with Matt and sort of seeing other artists or just artists that I followed playing So Far sounds. And I was like, I love the idea of it. And I feel like it's a good opportunity to sort of foster a sense of community.
Definitely.
In the music industry. And what's been really cool is every time we've mentioned so far on the podcast and we tag them in it, they're like super responsive.
Oh, absolutely.
Which I was surprised by.
Yeah, I don't know if So Far Sounds has a poster child or anything, but it definitely should be Matt Wheeler.
Absolutely.
There's nobody who's like sung the praises. I did an interview piece in which I was interviewing Matt Wheeler for one of my classes, and it basically kind of became a So Far Sounds piece because,
right.
Not necessarily because it was on purpose, but he really was just able to give so much detail as to what it does.
Yeah, absolutely.
He has a way with words.
What's it kind of like joining the So Far community? Because So Far Sounds basically is a community.
Mm-hmm.
Really, the way they present themselves is that we get all these artists to come together, work together, and play these small little local shows. So for you guys, what was the experience of getting to just kind of, when you entered in the So Far Sounds community, I guess?
Well, it was a huge bolster. I mean, to go into cities where you might either never have performed before or only perform occasionally and have 100 people already there at your disposal to listen to your music purely to come just to hear music. They don't know what kind of music. They don't know who's playing that night. But it's amazing. And it really supports, I think, even in Matt's case, like, independent artists touring, because you can kind of always guarantee you'll have a stop, you know, if you figure it out. And they So Far even has like forms where like, hey, if you're gonna be in multiple cities, we'll help you out and we'll set you up with multiple So Fars.
When you did your other So Far shows, did it help that you had had one under your belt already?
Definitely.
Did you reach out to So Far? Those were gigs that you specifically reached out and said, we want to do
a So Far show.
Okay.
And they'll do also So Far alumni shows. Like now with New York, like if we reach out, you know, whenever we're coming back and they'll be like, oh, you've played New York before. Well, how about we'll have you at one of our alumni shows when you're coming through, which is great.
What is the difference between a regular show and an alumni show?
So the only slight difference I can tell is like it'll be, they won't like film the alumni shows. It'll be a little bit more intimate and even more private in that way. Huh. Yeah.
Even though obviously the video is a great thing to get out of it.
Yeah.
Did you feel at all like it intruded on the vibe of the room? At all? Because like sometimes if you go to a show, like a very intimate show, and there's, you know, the band's photographer taking pictures the entire time, it's kind of like, you're killing the mood. Like, but was that at all like an issue? Did it just sort of feel natural?
I didn't even really notice, honestly, as it was happening.
Yeah, we did it only for that first one. The other two, so the first one was a larger venue and the audience was kind of sitting more spread out. It might have intruded in the more intimate shows where they were so packed into the room, they were literally at our feet. So I think they are good at with determining like which space will be appropriate for a video.
How do you feel about that when you're playing a room that, you know, is packed full and there's people literally right in front of you as you're performing? Because that sounds terrifying to me. This gives me stage anxiety. I can't imagine like dealing with that.
It's great. Like, in this way of being terrifying, it forces you out of your box. You know, we're comfortable playing acoustic, but even more so, you're so vulnerable and so exposed, and you just have to embrace it full force. And I think that's something huge for artists to be able to
do. And at the same time, it's more lighthearted in that way. It's just people, you're just having a good time. You know, it's low stress. Like, if you make a mistake, it's not a big deal. Like, hopefully we don't make mistakes.
Yeah.
Do you watch people in the crowd? Like, do you? Because
sometimes.
I'm always so conscious of this when I can make eye contact. Remember Matt Wright said that he made eye contact with you at the show?
Right. Yeah.
And he was like, yeah, no, I saw you guys. I'm like,
I forget what it was. He was playing one of his songs and I was really vibing with what he was playing. And there was a moment in which he sang a note and then he did like this. And I thought, but for the people listening at home, he gave me a slight head nod. And I thought that was his way of saying like, sup. And so I gave him a head nod back. Like, yeah, I really dig what you're putting out there. Thanks, man.
He is like one of the nicest people I've ever met by accident. Like, I want to go down to Atlanta and get him on the podcast because he is just so sweet. And that was one of like the best conversations after a show, because it turned out my mom, she looks him up on Facebook and realizes that he went to college and used to play with a guy in Nashville that I've known for like 5 years. No, and so I go up and like, hey, do you know Aaron Legrone? And he's like, yeah, I haven't played with him in like 5 years though. How do you know this? And he's like, my mom looked you up on Facebook and you had mutual friends and I just thought I'd throw it out there. And yeah, no, it was just like,
that's cool.
It's one of those weird, like, yeah, small world so things small in music, which is crazy how like small the music community
it honestly is. It honestly is. Across state lines and everything.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like, there's so many people that I can think of that if I were to mention, you know, somebody in Nashville that I knew, like, everybody would know them. Or mm-hmm. if I meant, you know, there are bands on this podcast that I can say, you know, their name and a bunch of people know who they are. Yeah. And I'll go to different states and I'll mention the Thought Lot and people know what that is. And it's yeah. so weird to, yeah. like... Have you guys ever had sort of that experience of, I don't know, just maybe being recognized, or like somebody maybe had seen your show before or listened to your music in a state that you had just played for the first time, and they, you know, anything kind of weird like that?
I think. Well, I feel like Chris always knows somebody at every show.
It does happen. We played a show at Gypsy Sally's in D.C., with another band, and then I found out I went to the same high school as them, but they were like 6 years older than yeah. me, so I didn't really. But we had to go all the way to DC to find that out. Like,
yeah. You know? Yeah, yeah. So yeah, and he's really good at like picking people out of the crowd, being like, "Hey, I think I know that guy, oh, but yeah. why is he in New York or DC?" Or yeah, I thought he was, right? yeah. Or like even what the other day, you were like, "I thought he was in Germany,"
but
he
was oh yeah, back. Yeah, a friend of mine. Yeah, Scott, yeah.
So that's always good. We love those.
Have you ever had any? I don't know, particularly memorable, like, after-show experiences?
Well, honestly, like, that's what we love, is talking, like, one-on-one with audience members. You know, we find that the ones that come up to you after the show, we're always like, come talk with us, we're friendly, and, you know, most of the audience, you know, does their own thing, and that's mm-hmm. all good. But the ones that do come up and say how meaningful the song was or really have tuned into a lyric, it's just like, wow, even if it's this one person was the only person listening in this audience, or even the only person in the room, because we've been there. It's amazing. The impact that you know, you're self-doubting, like, did I have, you know, are we on the right track? Obviously it resonates, and that's really yeah. cool.
I remember one of the So Far New York shows we played. The show was actually over. We were walking back to, like, the train station, and these people came up, and they were at the show, and I didn't recognize them out of context, and they just came up and said, thank you. Like, we really enjoyed that. And like, that kind of gives us purpose for what we do.
Yeah.
And it was cool that, like, even on the street, like, after the show's over, they still came up
yeah
to talk to us.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
You mentioned kind of those shows where maybe only one person is paying attention. Have you guys played your fair share of breweries?
And, yes. Yeah. Oh, yes.
I feel like we can always kind yes. of know what we're talking about when exactly. we say nobody's paying attention. It's the fact that when you play restaurants and breweries, yeah. people aren't listening.
But what we found in doing that is that there usually is are a handful of people that are intently listening, and they might not tell you until afterwards. And so we kind of try to have this mentality of always, you know, play 100%, like we're playing a Madison Square Garden, even if we're playing in the back corner of a brewery. Just because they'll come up to you afterwards and the details they'll pick out, you're like, wow, I didn't know you were actually listening. That's amazing. Yeah. Thank you.
It is. The brewery thing is so interesting because breweries are becoming more and more prominent, mm-hmm. especially mm-hmm. those that are having music. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people are playing them. And the general consensus I think that we've gotten is that they're good because they pay.
Exactly.
But it can be disheartening if you're constantly playing breweries because it feels like
a job.
Like a job. Yeah. Like you're not paying, mm-hmm. being paid attention to. You're not really sharing with people. Yeah. There's not mm-hmm. that connection of like an intimate room. Mm-hmm. How did you like Gypsy Sally's? I've never been. And someone I know just played there. And yeah. a couple people I know have played there. But can you tell me what that was? Like, I've never been, so
yeah.
I'm
just, it was a pretty cool vibe. We played in the Vinyl Lounge, which is kind of yep. like their smaller
acoustic,
cafe. Room.
Yeah.
And we just did an acoustic set there. And
it was cool. It was yeah. packed because the band we played with, well, it was a good night, I think, that we went. And then the band we played with had a lot of DC connections, which mm-hmm. we always recommend trying to pair if you're going to a city or a new venue, pair up obviously with a band more local to there. And so the crowd was pretty high energy, and for an acoustic set, that's sometimes surprising. So
I think it was like the week before Christmas too.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. December.
Yeah. So yeah, we loved it. We would go back. Absolutely. And yeah, it was a really good experience. I think it was our first show in DC, which was nice.
Yeah.
As far as, like you mentioned, pairing up with artists that are local to an area that you're playing, how do you find those bands if you are trying to find someone that is local to the area that you're new to playing?
Well, that's, I mean, it's the small world concept. I mean, we both do try to cultivate our network of band friends, you know, through people we've played with or people that they know, and then you just kind of go and see where they've played and who has been on that bill. And it's kind of this whole rabbit hole of the internet, thankfully, in this day and age, that allows us to do that. And then we reach out, and like a lot of times it's like, hey, we know Matt Wheeler, so he recommended. I mean, honestly, Matt has a lot of credit here, but with other bands too, that, you know, we saw that you played here with them. And what's cool now is we're receiving a lot of that. So bands from New York will reach out to us and be like, hey, we saw you've played here with these people, we're doing a show, would you come up for that, or could we come down, let's trade. That's amazing.
What's the farthest that you guys have gone for a show?
Ohio is the farthest so far. Yeah.
That's generally, that's a good.
Yeah. A good like northeast region. Yeah. Tri-state is like our primary, but you know, we've obviously gone further.
And if I am correct, Steel Stacks just happened.
Yes.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
Which I am familiar with. Again, never been. But I'm just curious about that experience. First of all, how did you get booked as part of that?
Yeah.
Is that something that you guys have played before?
No, this was our first year. So
we played the venue.
Oh, we played the venue. Yeah, sorry. We've played it. Yeah, we just not at Music Fest. So we've played Arts Quest a few times before. But our first time at the Music Fest, which is the 10-day festival in Bethlehem, it's incredible. We played on the night Kesha was headlining. We were not on the same stage as Kesha. But, you know, that level to our level of range of, you know, musicians. And it was incredible. We got the opportunity to play twice on Tuesday, once in the Martin acoustic set in the Martin Yingling tent, and then on the other stage sponsored by Martin, with our full band. And it was amazing. And for a Tuesday night show, it was, you know, probably the best you would find in this area, of course. A lot of people come out, and it's just one of those things that we had applied several years. And I think doing that to festivals and not being accepted, or, you know, just kind of as you're growing, you see when you finally get into those festivals, okay, this is the level we needed to be at. And this is the level of musicians everybody else is, because everybody we heard was phenomenal. And I was like, I want to go back and attend, because, you know, these, obviously you expect the headliners to be the headliners, but bands we hadn't heard of, and maybe that's just us, just blew my mind. Yeah.
Is it hard not to feel discouraged when you're applying for festivals and you don't get accepted, or you don't hear back, or I feel like I say it every podcast, I absolutely hate booking. I will never do it again. I did it for like 2 years, and I will never do it again for an artist. I do it for my venue, but
I think it's...
have war flashbacks from just how, like, because I take everything personally.
Right.
So it was just like, for me, it's like I can't
stand
rejection. So how do you sort of keep...
Well, I do our booking primarily, and I'm really good with that. I kind of just take it as, okay, well, we have to be better. Like, this is like we're competing against ourselves. And I'm always telling myself and cheering with the guys that, you know, we just need to constantly improve. And I don't think as an artist there should ever be a point where you're just, okay, I'm good. I'm here. Now I can just like sit back and chill, because that's when you're going to stagnate. So not getting into festivals is a big motivation to continue to improve. And sometimes that's things out of our control, like improve your recordings, or, you know, the way that you showcase your band. That's a lot of time just investments and things that come with time. but also just improving your songs and your sound and getting people to come out and hear you live, because I think live performance is what we do best.
Yeah.
And the feedback we get when people hear us live is, every time we see you, you're better. And I'm like, that's what I want to hear.
It's interesting that you say that you're competing against yourself, because mm-hmm. one of the questions that I always want to ask, but I feel like it's going to come across as rude, is how do you avoid comparing yourselves or your success to the successes of other bands that you're seeing yeah. in the community?
Yeah. That's hard. It's tough, yeah. yeah, it's hard because you sometimes everybody does feel like, oh man, like I'm happy for them, but how come that's mm-hmm. not us? But then you have to look at them and say, you know, every band's unique, and who knows where they are in their process and their progress, and also, you know, what kind of network they have versus mm-hmm. what we have. And so I think there's room in the industry and enough shows for everybody. That's why I always say, like, a band getting a slot at Music Fest doesn't exclude us from getting a slot at Music mm-hmm. Fest. If we don't get a slot, that's on us. Like, mm-hmm. so I think you just have to kind of internalize that in a good way. That could be pretty like negative if you were like, oh, I'm so bad, like, and you know, but in a positive way to like, okay, let's just be better, let's compete against ourselves, because that's the only thing stopping us is us.
That's good advice. I feel like that's good advice almost just all around. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because yeah. I think a lot of people have an issue with comparing themselves to other people's mm-hmm. success, and mm-hmm. I have an issue with that
yeah.
wholeheartedly, just in different areas of my life. And so mm-hmm. it is interesting.
With all this talk of success and improvement and comparison, one question that really kind of came to me the other day when we were interviewing Scott Lowe, mm-hmm. Scott kind of I guess I should introduce the question. And then, what for you guys as a band, what is the goal, or what is your mission statement? Because for me, Scott Lowe the other day, he basically sounded like he found his corner of the world and he wanted to share that corner with everybody, you know,
yeah.
but he even said in the interview, like, I don't ever want to leave this place. I will to play shows, but really I want you guys to come to me. And, you know, because he runs a campground and he runs shows out of that area. So, but he, yeah. and when you hear him talk, he loves it. He just wants to share that experience with everyone.
Right.
And it seems like he kind of found his yeah. mission as an artist. Yeah. So what, I mean, do you guys have any specific goal in mind when you're making music, when you're improving upon yourself? Like, what is it all to get to? If you have thought of that.
What's
yet?
The end goal?
Well, I think the end goal is that we make the very best music we're capable of that is timeless, hopefully, and that we can share it with the largest possible audience that we can reach in our lifetime. I mean, honestly, I don't think that there's an end in sight. The idea is, we always like joke, if we can be performing when we're 75, that's the goal. And if we have an audience that'll listen to us when we're 75 and can still make records that are relevant, and it's never like, because you can do that in a way where you capitalize on trends, and you know, if electronic music is really popular right now, you shift to that. And some of that, you can kind of take your sound and fit it a little bit into what might get you where you're going quickest. But I think in a way, it's just kind of, what is the good music we make? What is the best music we make? And then, mm-hmm. okay, that's this. We'll continue to improve on that. And then how can we get this to the biggest audience? And we'll continue to improve on that, because that's a very long road. Often is delivering your music to a greater audience. So for us, it means traveling, probably. It means, you know, playing bigger shows, but perhaps fewer. You know, that might be mm-hmm. next on the horizon.
When did this lovely record that's on the wall come out?
Yeah.
That was our first album. Glitter and Wine, for those of you who are listening. That was
great title. I love both of those things.
We came up with that title because we've been yeah. tipped in both of those things.
One of the first shows we ever played was at a winery, and we used to get paid in wine often. Like, there's a winery here, each take a bottle.
There's so much wine.
But so we played a winery, got paid partially in wine, and then also in the tip jar, someone just threw a bunch of glitter. Just a
handful of glitter. And we're like, this is great.
Like, all right,
that's
I guess.
All this is awesome.
Yeah.
That's a dream come true for me.
You think it was an insult or a compliment?
Mike. We took it as a compliment.
Yeah, we took it as a compliment.
Mike. Oh, no,
I get the vibe of somebody being like, I will tip you in sparkles.
There's like good glitter and then there's FU glitter.
Yeah.
It's all about the intention. Thankfully, it wasn't
like the kind that never comes off of anything.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
My Instagram handle is literally shedding glitter. Nice. Like, I love glitter. Sorry.
Well, yeah. And we were like, we don't want to forget the time when we were happy and content being tipped in wine and glitter. Yeah. You know, no matter how big we get, that, you know, that's kind of what it's about.
It's like going back to the success conversation. Like, we wanted to remind ourselves, like, if we ever end up being successful, like, don't forget this time, because then we will hopefully stay grounded and humble that way, you know?
Yeah.
How many albums do you guys have out?
So we released our second in like end of February this year, so we've got two officially out.
And what was the recording process for that?
So the first one we did completely ourselves at Lebanon Valley College, where I went, and our drummer Tyler, who actually recorded and produced the album, he went there as well. So yeah, we did that all ourselves, and that was actually shortly after we added, because Keely and I started as an acoustic duo, just one guitar, two voices. We recently added a drummer and a bassist. So when we were in the studio recording these songs, we were still kind of finding out how they should even sound with a full band. Yeah. So that was a neat experience. But yeah, we did a 10-track album in the studio.
And then this past one, we did a 3-song EP at Milk Boy in Philly. So we had the opportunity to work with John Anthony of Philly Post, is an incredible producer. And he was able to get us into that studio, which is amazing. An amazing opportunity. And, you know, when we got there, we learned that, like, pretty recently James Taylor had been in there recording. We were like, okay, so no pressure. But
just rub yourself on all the equipment for good luck.
And we did that in, what, like, just a weekend?
Yeah, it was 14 hours. We finished 3 tracks.
So we, like, hyper-prepared, and we knew exactly what, you know, we wanted. And then John took us to even the next level of just perfecting that sound and just getting it onto the record in 14 hours.
We were just talking about Milk Boy this morning before we left.
Yeah, I was talking about Milk Boy because it's a Milk Boy out of Philadelphia is kind of this unique venue of, it doesn't really matter what size artist you are, you can get in there. Mm-hmm. If you're just a local guy on a Philadelphia couch, you haven't released any music, you haven't recorded anything, you can find a way to get on the Milk Boy stage. And at the same time, some of these huge bands are going and playing out of Milk Boy. So it's kind of, it's a very crazy venue where, you know, you can go on Monday and you can see John Doe just playing what he dreamt up that morning. Yeah. And then the next day you can see, like, James Taylor playing the hits, you know?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. It's their model is something special. I don't know. I don't know how they do it, but it's great. So we were thrilled to be there.
Mm-hmm.
I love hearing about, like, other just sort of small venues. Or just, I don't know, interesting venues. I feel like you're very well-versed in Philadelphia.
I'm very well-versed in Philadelphia venues because Philadelphia is a hotbed right now of opportunities, at the very least. I mean, you've got Milk Boy, Johnny Brenda's, Boot and Saddle. Like, there's a million. There's even a church. Like, just a church. I can't remember the name of it.
Yeah.
But a bunch of artists will go and play out of there, and it's like Philadelphia certainly has the opportunities to play.
Yeah, that's really where we try to take root.
Yeah,
in Pennsylvania.
That's partially why we chose to record there. Also. Yeah,
just made sense.
Do you guys? This is just because I just had to drive through it. Do you guys play in Harrisburg very often?
Occasionally.
Sometimes. Yeah, we just did like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, we did 2 weeks ago, and then we And we had our first album release show there. And we'll do occasionally, like, if local bands are trying to coordinate a show. The funny thing is, like, the venues around here, they're fewer, obviously, especially to bring our band to. So we usually play more acoustic shows around here. And because they're fewer, it's actually a little more difficult to coordinate booking locally. So we end up having less shows locally than we do in, like, Philly or... at least less full band shows.
Is music full time for you guys?
Full time for me. They have, as far as, because I do the booking as well, but he's still got a job, and the other two guys do. So.
That's always something that we sort of talk about, because sometimes there are people that we interview that are doing music completely full time, and they've completely dedicated to it.
Yeah.
And even like the Barons, who, you know, go on these massive tours mm-hmm. and then squirrel up and then go on massive tours and then right. squirrel up. Which, of course, I always use squirrel as an adjective and a verb and everything. But we've only interviewed a handful of musicians, I think, that are who have jobs and have to balance music and...
Well, I think it's interesting because the most, arguably the biggest band that we've interviewed, Ottawa, they all still have jobs, mm-hmm. but they're also probably the biggest group that we've gotten the chance to interview so far.
Yeah.
On the topic of, you know, having a job while performing music, is the goal eventually to just full-time it the whole time? Like, you want to get out of that? I don't want to say, because I don't know your job, I don't know your story, that you're in some dead-end job and you don't feel fulfilled. Like, I don't want to draw that conclusion.
It's a terrible thing to assume. You
know? Right. But, like, that's also kind of the stereotypical story.
Sure.
Right?
Sure.
But is the goal, you know, full-time, live, breathe music? Or do you think that as long as you can support the music habit, you're content working some other job? You know, is the opportunity to perform enough to keep the fire burning, for lack of a better term?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. And for me, I don't really think too much into the future. Like, I just kind of am taking this journey and see how far it takes us. Mm-hmm. But it's nice because right now I am lucky. I do have a job where it's flexible. If I have a show, I can leave whenever I need to. I have 3-day weekends every weekend. So Friday, Saturday, Sunday, we can gig. And it's nice that I can do this job and then feed it into my passions. Mm-hmm. Part of it is kind of nice too, because I feel like if I had a job related to music where I was making my living that way, I would fear maybe I would kind of get burned out if I'm like, oh, I have to do this show to pay for my rent or something right. like that. You know what I mean?
Right.
But maybe someday if we get to that point, like, that'd be great too, you know? Well, I'm not really ruling out either side of it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think just on like a universal level, it's for our band at least, it's like, there's this sweet spot. I don't want them to quit their jobs before it's not a financial burden to not have a job, because we don't want music to feel like work.
Yeah.
I think, and until you are at the level where you're playing big enough shows where you're like, okay, we're good. Mm-hmm. Like, could have a job if I wanted, but like, I don't have to. But this also isn't demanding that we have to play 5 shows a week in order to eat.
Mm-hmm. I just find it interesting seeing the parallel between, you know, we've interviewed bands in which the vibe very much is, no, it's music or nothing. Like, mm-hmm. I can't keep going unless I'm playing music.
Right.
And then there are others who are perfectly content to keep working just to feed their music habit. And, mm-hmm. you know, I think it's interesting seeing
yeah.
where people draw the line or where people kind of take their motivation from.
Well, right. And I think it probably depends on the person and the job. Like he said, he's very fortunate to right. have a job that we're able to play every weekend. And the other guys' jobs are flexible as well. But we're also fortunate in the way they have jobs that the gigs we take, they don't have to be paying, which a lot of the larger opportunities don't pay you very much, especially if you're not a big name.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't want to miss out on those opportunities because they don't pay you very much.
You guys have a big opportunity coming up later this
yes.
month. Unfortunately, this episode will air after.
That's all right.
But you guys have a very big gig coming up.
Yeah.
18th?
Yeah.
Can you tell me what that is?
Philadelphia Folk
that
Festival.
Was seamless,
that was very beautiful. She's pro.
It's weeks
pro.
Of weeks of practice. Weeks of practice. Because I'll tell you
months,
that
I mean.
If this was our first through 5th episode, Hannah very much would have out loud gone, and now for a seamless transition.
I love doing that, though. I am like so just, you know,
no,
if I can poke fun
perfect.
At it, then.
That was perfect. Yes, on the 18th of August, we are at the Philadelphia Folk Festival. So it is our first time playing there, too. This summer has been awesome in the way of, our goal was to really, I'll say, level up this summer. And I think we did that. Yeah. And so we're super excited to play. And obviously the lineup is astounding, as you can imagine. They're in there, I think, what, 60th year, 59th, something crazy. And you look at the posters and, you know, Bob Dylan's or, you know, all of the legends are on them. And you're just like, okay, this is so cool. But the bands playing this year are incredible. And we're part of the Philadelphia Folk Song Society, their co-op. So they've been really instrumental in helping us take root in Philly and giving us opportunities like these.
What is the Philadelphia Folk Song Society?
So it's they do a lot. They put on shows. They put on the festival. They do workshops and various events throughout Philadelphia. But it's basically this network of people and bands in and around Philadelphia who come and join together to just share opportunities, share resources, and share knowledge. And so we heard about it and we were like, this is amazing. This is exactly what we want to be a part of. And they've kind of reamped their efforts this past year, and we were able to join and then get into the folk festival.
Did you guys apply for Tiny Desk?
We did, yes.
Can you, I guess, tell me a little bit about why you chose to? Was this your first time entering?
This I think was our second, mm-hmm. I think it was our second time entering. Well, we're fans of, you know, NPR, XPN, everything that they do, and of course had been familiar with Tiny Desk in the way that they bring infamous artists to do the acoustic sets behind their Tiny Desk in the office. But when we heard about this contest, obviously we were jumped on it. But this year was the first year we did it with the band and filmed it actually in this room, which was a really cool experience. And obviously we didn't get in or win, but I think it is about that in some way. But the odds of getting into the top of a national competition in general are very slim. So I think it's less about that and more just about, again, trying to be a part of the community, trying to support what they are doing, which is similar in some ways to what SOFAR is doing, is bringing more intimate performances to a wider audience. So we certainly are supportive of that.
We're at about 45, right?
42 and a half.
Okay, so we're going to start wrapping up just because...
We try to keep them under an hour.
Yeah, which is hard because I didn't even get through half of my questions that I had prepped. But that's great. That's the best kind of interview for us is like just to lighting come in.
No, she said lightning round, so I had to start thinking of questions to pump out there.
I like that was your first choice.
I mean, to be honest, I wanted to say something, but that was all that came to mind.
That sounds funny.
It's pretty funny because you're talking to a vegetarian and a vegan, so that is pretty funny.
Neither.
Neither.
Or.
Tempeh or tofu.
Exactly.
Well, before we go into plugs and what have you been listening to lately, do we want to do the Dream Bill as one of our segments? Like, dream concert. Like, if you had to put together... Let's phrase it as if you had to put together a concert of you and two other groups or people that you're going to play a show with.
Oh, sure. Right? Share the stage with
you. You're sharing the stage. Oh, jeez. Yes. I think, because we're not just talking to music fans, although I'm sure you're fans of everyone, right? Yeah. We're talking to musicians. So let's get the, if you're put together somebody to not only compliment your sound, but that you think it'd be fun to play with, who are you playing with? I walked in noticing that Dawes was on the TV.
Yeah.
Dawes was on
it. Personal favorite of
mine. Love Dawes. Love Dawes. I think this might be different for us personally.
It could be, yeah.
It could also be, two people is very limiting. And also there are bands that aren't performing in their format anymore.
You're talking only bands that are still performing?
You can make this some kind of dream scenario where, you can bring Led Zeppelin back together if you want.
Oh my gosh.
Now it's expansive.
Do I need to make it more limited?
No.
They've only released
cool.
an album in the last year.
That's cool. Well, I'll go first. So Chris has a little bit more time to maybe think. He's got a few more favorites, perhaps, on his current plate than I do. I'll just go with whoever first pops into my mind. So I really have grown to love this. They're popular, but they're not totally widely known. Called Darling Side. I don't know if you guys have heard of them. I love them. So I think... I've gone to several of their shows and been blown away and would hope in some humble way that we would compliment them in a lineup. And then also a personal favorite who don't perform anymore as a duo would be the Civil Wars. Could open the show. and just make me cry. And then I don't know where we would perform, because maybe we should perform first so I don't like start crying or something. I cry at both of them.
You're going to cry right now.
I'm probably going to cry. I cry when I'm happy, sad, angry, everything.
Darling Side did the 1979 cover, right? Smashing Pumpkins? Yeah. That's probably the cheapest way of knowing them. Like, I'm sure they have. But that was how I discovered them, at the very least, was their cover of the Smashing Pumpkins.
Did you play them on the radio?
Yeah, I believe I actually played that cover, yeah.
Yeah, they're incredible.
For me, actually, I'll probably choose Chris Stapleton as one of them. And I know he's like a pretty modern guy, but like in recent years, like he's had such a big impact on the music we create.
True.
And a lot of it too, because he tours with the same lineup that we have, like drum, bass, guitar, male voice, female voice. That's it, just four people. And like, I saw him a few times in concert and was just blown away with how much he can do with so little. And then it kind of helps us realize what we can do.
Definitely.
So he's probably one I would have. The Civil Wars is another great pick.
Yeah. Can't go wrong.
I don't know who. I might actually pick John Mayer.
Yeah.
Just because, like, we don't really sound like him, but, like, as a guitarist, he's probably the one guy who's had the biggest impact on my playing. And I'm not even saying he's the best or anything like that, but just the way he pulls from his influences and like the recipe he creates just really affects how I play.
Definitely. And then another tough question. We're all about the hard-hitting journalism here on the podcast. What have you guys been listening to? What would you recommend our listeners at home listen to?
Well, Dawes was on. We love Dawes. Mm-hmm.
New album out a little while ago.
Yep. Yeah, mm-hmm. Darling Side is certainly a recommendation of mine. Kaleo is a band that I love.
Yeah.
And, I mean, everything, honestly. I could just go on forever.
I've been really into, I guess, I don't even know what to call it. They'd call it, like, the modern outlaw country stuff. Mm. Like, Chris Stapleton, Jason Isbell, Margot Price, Lucas Nelson, like, Willie Nelson's son. Sturgill Simpson, another one. Like, all those kind of modern... I guess they call it indie country, which it really isn't. It's just country, I guess.
This is something that I get really fired up about, which we can, I'll keep it short, but there really is this incredible new revival of Nashville.
Yeah.
And the first person that comes to mind for me is Courtney Marie Andrews, who is just an incredible, incredible country singer. And it really is like we're about to usher in a new era of country music, and I am so excited for it. But that's the new country music that's coming out now that is, I don't know, throwing back to the 70s, and that to me is so thrilling to see that we sort of went through that pop mainstream country era, and now it's sort of returning, like everything else is sort of returning to a more classic version of itself.
Yeah,
it's really exciting. I'll have someone for you guys to listen to, but I can't remember. I always get there's a bunch of like Caitlin's and Caroline's currently right now, and so I get their names mixed up. Sure. And I did it on the podcast the one time, and I was like, oh god, I can't believe I did that, because I panicked. I'm like, I said three last names for the same person. And then plugs, everybody's got to pull their calendar out for the most part.
We don't know anything past today or tomorrow. At least I don't. But I mean, our website is thejblairs.com. You can always find our performance schedule updated there. But if this is coming out in September, you said end of this September?
September 5th.
Oh, 5th. Oh. Oh, well, on the 7th, we're in New York at the American Folk Art Museum doing an acoustic set there for their lovely series.
And then Facebook, Instagram, and
Instagram and Twitter is all at the J Players.
Awesome. Yeah. Thank you guys.
Thanks so much.
All right, guys, that does it for this interview. Thanks so much for tuning in. Be sure to tune in again next week. We post every single Wednesday. We are available on iTunes, Podomatic, and Google Play Podcasts. You can follow us on Instagram at The Flat Nickel Podcast. Follow us on Facebook at The Flat Nickel Podcast. Make sure to drop us a like, a favorite, a subscribe, a five-star review wherever you're listening, and we will be sure to get another episode out to you guys next week.